Well, welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. However, today I want to just open the news with this. Sadly, I must report the passing of the son of one of our news contributors, Jamie Price Jones. He was a very much loved son, husband and father, whose loss we know has been felt by many. As a small token of respect, we would like to take this opportunity here at the Archaeology News to dedicate this edition to Jamie and to offer our sincere condolences to his family and friends at this time. Just like to take a few seconds pause. And now to the news. An Iron Age feast has been found in England, and an ancient tsunami has also been found in the Caribbean. A possible Mesolithic site has been uncovered on the North York Moors, and an ancient civilization is uncovered in Bulgaria. The art of cheesemaking turns out to date back to the Neolithic in Europe, and museum is to examine the remains found in an Irish bog of yet another Irish bog body. Bronze Age stone that was damaged after a car crash is to be replaced, and it turns out that cavemen were better at drawing animals than most modern artists. An Iron Age helmet, it's quite a remarkable find, was recovered in England by a metal detectorist, and we have a new timeline for the building of Stonehenge. The discovery of 13 Iron Age cauldrons at Chiseldon in west of London was one of the largest ever such groupings found in Europe. One of the cauldrons features a handle plate in the form of a cow's head, a zoomorphic decoration, which is actually otherwise unknown on British cauldrons. The cauldrons were made in the 2nd or 1st century BCE and built to last with an iron rim and bowl of sheet copper alloy riveted together. The artefacts were found buried in a 2-metre-wide pit, along with skulls from a number of cattle. What the cauldron was last used for, however, is a bit of a mystery, but Jodie Joy and a team from European Iron Age collections at the British Museum suspect that large quantities of food and drink were probably consumed. Feasts at this time would have marked very significant events in the calendar, or special occasions. Archaeologist Mike Pitts, who edits British Archaeology magazine, said that notwithstanding the cattle skulls, it might also have been pork. Pigs were very important animals in feasting. Of course, whatever was in the cauldron had been boiled, so I'm sure it was very tasty. Now to the Caribbean. A detailed analysis of sediments from the island of Bonaire in the Caribbean presents convincing evidence for an extraordinary wave impact that dates back some 3,300 years, suggesting that this tsunami entirely changed the coastal ecosystem. Dr. Max Engel and colleagues from the University of Köln in Germany investigated sediment cores from the coastal lagoon areas of Washington Slagby National Park. Looking particularly and specifically, in fact, at grain size distribution, carbonate content, organic matter, magnetic susceptibility and fauna, their analysis showed that the sediments had critically been linked with tsunami deposits. This single catastrophic event produced long-term ecological significance. Now, to something which I probably know slightly more about. You find one Mesolithic house and suddenly they're appearing all over the place. Archaeologists are now investigating another possible Mesolithic site in the North York Moors National Park, right up there in the sort of north of England. Fieldwork has been carried out at a number of sites across the northeast fringes of the moor, and attention is now focused on a site at Goldsborough near Whitby. More than 450 flint fragments were found at the site in the autumn, some of which are tools dating back 7,000 years. It's rare to find evidence of Mesolithic people, and the discovery is the culmination of a major project that has been searching for traces of them in northeast Yorkshire. Archaeologist Rachel Graham of Tees Archaeology said that Mesolithic people have always been thought of as nomadic, and in many places, the only sign of their presence is these tiny fragments of flint. But discoveries such as the Mesolithic house at Hwick in Northumberland, Star Car near Scarborough, and on the banks of the River Forth in Scotland show that in some places at least they did settle down. It's quite exciting for the archaeologists to think that they might find similar archaeological remains there. Now in Bulgaria, a team of archaeologists have unearthed additional evidence of what may have been Europe's first civilization at a site located near the town of Pazardzak in southern Bulgaria. Known as Yunatsete, it is a tell site about 110 metres in diameter and 12 metres high, rising above fields next to the small Bulgarian village of the same name. The tell contains the remains of an urbanised settlement dated at its earliest to the 5th millennium BCE. Director Yavor Boyadjev of the National Institute of Archaeology and Museums, Bulgarian Academy of Sciences, and his excavators have unearthed artefacts such as weapons, spondylic shells, decorated pottery and pottery sherds that are marked with pictograms, and evidence of structures dating to 4900 BCE, including fortifications and a recently discovered wooden platform that was likely the floor of a building destroyed by fire. The Copper Age settlement was destroyed, in fact, by hostile action, and this we can be fairly certain about around 4200 to 4100 BCE, because amongst the ruins of the last Chalcolithic horizon are found the skeletons of its inhabitants, mainly children, elderly men and women, a testimony, in fact, of a cruel massacre. There are some resettlement of the devastated settlement, but soon after, even they left, and Tel Yunatsete was abandoned. Research has shown that beginning in the 7th century BCE, the Balkan Peninsula was a gateway through which Neolithic culture, including farming and animal husbandry, spread from Anatolia and the Near East. Beginning in the 5th millennium BCE, human populations in the central and eastern Balkans began developing metal process technologies, notably that of copper, into a relatively large-scale industry for the first time in world history. These Balkan Copper Age cultures had all the characteristics of the first civilizations, including the very first urban settlements in Europe, Tel Yunatsete, Durankulak and Provadia in Bulgaria, just to name a few. They had dense networks of settlements, industrial production of goods, especially metal products and salt, developing trade networks, pictograms and characters, interpreted by some scholars as possibly the world's oldest script, which date back to the 6th and early 5th millennium BCE. I'm sure that one will start an argument anyway. As well as precious artefacts made of gold, bone and stone. The world's oldest gold treasure, in fact, was found at the Varna Copper Age Necropolis. More information about this excavation and, in fact, how individuals can participate in it can be found at the website for the Balkan Heritage Field School. It was Balkan Heritage Field School. So if you fancy getting involved in that site, it will cost you, of course, go along to the website and see what is available. Actually, if you're looking for things to do, then you could do worse and have a look at the Past Horizons World Project site, www.pasthorizons.com/worldprojects. Currently in the process of revamping that, but we have over 300 projects that you can get involved in around the world. Now to cheese. Traces of dairy fat in ancient ceramic fragments suggest that people have been making cheese in Europe for up to 7,500 years. Early dairy farmers probably devised cheese making as a way to preserve and get the best out of milk from the cattle that they'd only just begun to herd. Peter Bogucci, an archaeologist at Princeton University in New Jersey, was among the first to suspect that cheese making might be going on in Europe as early as 5,500 BCE, way back in the 80s. He noticed that archaeologists working at ancient cattle rearing sites in Poland had found pieces of ceramic vessels riddled with holes reminiscent of cheese strainers. decades later. In a paper published in Nature, Boguchi and his collaborators have now confirmed with biochemical proof that the strainers were indeed used to separate dairy fats. Molecules preserved in the pores of the ancient clay were analysed and confirmed that they came from milk fats. This research provides the smoking gun that cheese manufacture was practiced by Neolithic people over 7,000 years ago. In fact, Richard Evershed, a chemist at Bristol and a co-author of the paper, said this is the first and only evidence of Neolithic cheese making in the archaeological record. A bold claim there. Cheese making would have given the Neolithic farmers a way to make the most out of the resource available from their herds. Early humans were unable, in fact, to digest milk sugars and lactose after childhood. However, traditionally made cheese contains much less lactose than fresh milk. The making of cheese would have, in fact, allowed them to get around the indigestibility of milk without getting ill. It makes you actually wonder how on earth they got to that point in the first place, because you think if you were using milk, you would sort of, you were getting sick, then you wouldn't really be going on to sort of think, well, there must be a way to make this edible to us. This is a fascinating bit of human behaviour. Anyway, Heather Paxson, a cultural anthropologist at Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, who studies US cheesemakers, not personally, I hope, suggests that Neolithic people might have curdled their milk with bacteria that are found in nature, resulting in something like a clumpy version of mozzarella. Evidence of dairy farming was previously found at archaeological sites dating from the 5th millennium BCE in Africa and the 7th millennium BCE at a site near Istanbul, but no sieves have been found at these locations, so there's no indication that cheese was actually being made there. The National Museum of Ireland is to begin examining the remains of Ireland's latest bog body, discovered at Bordnamona site in County Meath last week. The headless body was in fact found in a stack of peat by workers near Kinnegad. I'm sure that gave them a shock. An archaeological team from the National Museum was dispatched to inspect the remains, which were excavated and transported to Dublin. It's unclear at this stage the age, sex and cause of death, though these details are likely to emerge this week following examination by experts. The discovery comes just over a year after that of Cashel Man, remains from a bog in County Louth, which were thought to be those of a sacrificial victim. There's just four such bodies on display at the National Museums of on Kildare Street in Dublin. How ancient its year, we won't know. How ancient its year, a fabulous way of saying it. How old they are, we actually won't know, but we can guess that they're of some activity. So says Maeve Sikora, the assistant keeper of the museum's Irish Antiquities. Its upper body appears to be intact, and further analysis should be able to tell us a lot more about it. Now, a Bronze Age standing stone that was knocked down by a reversing car last year has been returned to its original position in Pembrokeshire, that's in Wales. The Bedmorris stone of Dinas Mountain near Newport was given a land, but has been a landmark actually for over 3,500 years. A scheduled monument and weighing over 2 tons, it stood 1.8 metres high. It's thought that the vehicle accidentally knocked over the stone, crushing a fence in October last year. I can't remember if they actually caught the person. The Bedmorris stone was taken away while National Park archaeologist Peter Crane and the fabulous Professor Jeff Wainwright, in partnership with CADU, excavated the location. The experts estimated it had been in place for 3,500 years, until knocked down by a car, probably for ceremonial purposes. What a cop-out. It's now been conserved and repaired and was replaced last week by the authority into its original position. Bedmorris was an important part of Newport's folklore, with two well-known legends linking Morrus, a notorious robber, to the stone. He was allegedly hanged for his crimes and buried beneath it. Well, the excavation has discovered that that wasn't quite true, but let's not get rid of a nice story. Now, the depiction of animals dates back to the Paleolithic, we can be sure of that, when people used cave paintings and carvings to illustrate the animals that they hunted. Experts of animal locomotion, though, are well aware that the majority of quadrupeds advance their legs in the same sequence when walking, and only the timing of the various combinations of supporting feet differ, more or less. analysis of 1,000 prehistoric and modern artistic quadruped walking depictions determined whether they are correct or not in respect to the limb attitudes presented. Basically, are their legs in the right location? You often get these fabulous sort of images of horses with all their legs off the ground, which is just not going to happen. The error rate of modern pre-1880s quadruped walking illustrations was in fact 83.5%, getting it wrong, much more than the error rate of 73% of mere chance. It decreased to 57% after 1887, when we seemed to get the hang of it. Prehistoric quadruped walking depictions had the lowest error rate, however, of 46%. Cavemen seem to have been more keenly aware of the slower motion of their prey animals and illustrated quadruped walking more precisely than any later artists, even today. Now, this was a fabulous find. I'm very glad to report on this one. You'll find a lot of amazing photographs in Past Horizons magazine, www.pasthorizonspr.com. A rare bronze helmet dating from the 1st century BCE has been unearthed on farmland near Canterbury, southeast England, along with a late Iron Age brooch and fragments of burnt bone. This has been done by a metal detectorist who contacted the relevant authorities, who were able to go out there and excavate more. What they found, a shallow circular pit initially cut into the natural chalk. Into this, the inverted helmet had then been placed. Either just before or just after the helmet had been placed in the ground, a quantity of cremated human bone was placed within it. The brooch was within the upper part of the bone deposit, making it likely that the cremated material had originally been contained in a cloth or leather bag fastened at the top with this brooch. With no surviving evidence to suggest that the spot had been permanently marked, it would seem that the burial was either isolated or part of a dispersed cemetery. Julia Farley, Iron Age curator at the British Museum, says that this is a very exciting find, one of only a handful of Iron Age helmets to have ever been found in Britain. Dr. Stephen Willis, senior lecturer of the archaeology at University of Kent, said one was known of in Belgium that had also been used as a cremation container. Andrew Richardson, specialist with Canterbury Archaeological Trust and jolly nice chap all round, commented that helmets like these did not originate in Britain and were worn, unfortunately, by both Gauls and Romans during this 1st century BCE period. Currently, the bone fragments are being examined and it should be possible to gather information about the individual buried within the helmet. But there is a tantalising possibility, and I have to stress here, it's only a possibility. Because if we're looking at around about the 55 BCE mark, then could we be looking at one of Caesar's soldiers? Well, we just have to wait and find out more. And now with our Stonehenge story. It's been a while since the last Stonehenge story. Ancient people probably assembled the massive horseshoe of megaliths at Stonehenge more than 4,600 years ago, while the smaller blue stones were imported from Wales later. This is a new study. Past researchers believe the blue stone oval and circle were erected earlier than the massive horseshoes. When study co-author Timothy Darvill, an archaeologist at Bournemouth in England, and his colleagues began excavations in 2008, they found the previous chronology didn't add up. The team estimated the age of the new artefacts from the site, and combining the new information with dating from past excavations, the team created a completely new timeline for Stonehenge's construction. The new analysis suggests that 2600 BCE, or around then, Neolithic people built the giant sandstone horseshoe, drawing the stone from nearby quarries. Only later did other builders arrange the much smaller blue stones. Those blue stones were then rearranged at various positions throughout the site over the next millennia, so says Darvill. The builders of the larger structure were pig farmers found only on the British Isles. In contrast, the blue stone builders would have been the Beaker people, sheep and cow herders who lived throughout Europe. Well, I expect next week there to be a completely different theory about the construction of Stonehenge. But then that is, as ever, the joy of archaeology. It keeps you thinking. So until next week, when we'll be doing our last sort of blast before Christmas. Can I remind you, you can always keep up with the fabulous news of Past Horizons. I don't have to tell you where to go, but I will. www.pasthorizonspr.com. And, of course, more can always be found at Stone Pages. That's news.stonepages.com. Thank you so much for listening to this Archaeology News, and we will see you again before Christmas.